Act one is we say the koan.
All right.
So once a feeling, a student asked Jojo, does a newborn baby have consciousness? Jojo said, tossing a ball on rushing waters. Student went on and asked Tozi, what does that mean, tossing a ball on rushing waters? Tozi said, moment after moment, it never stops flowing. So I think I'll just start with a couple of field notes. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here we are in this great week, you know, sort of dipping down towards the solstice. Bright, short day and a long, deep night. So I noticed a couple of things happening for me with this koan. And first of all, before even today, noticed about consciousness, remembering how when I was in graduate school, I wrote a thesis on attention. And of course, the first thing you discover when you go to write about something like that is nobody knows what attention is. And the more you study it, the more studies you take up, the more you realize that nobody knows what attention is. And I think it's the same with consciousness. Nobody knows what consciousness is. And there are a lot of things we know about consciousness, but we don't know what it is. And so, so the question sort of takes on this whimsical feeling for me. And then you get to ask, well, what's the real, what's the person really asking? Because nobody knows what consciousness is. So just, you can put that aside. That was sort of a first note. And then a couple things happened this morning. The first one was a dream I woke up from. And in the dream, someone was playing music, playing on an instrument. And next to me somehow was a sort of a cliff, a sort of a natural shelf thing. And notes were falling down the shelf. And I was playing the notes that were falling down the shelf. And the person who was playing the music then said, well, that was the music. You know, that was the harmony. How did you know that, you know? And I just sat there thinking, well, I didn't know that. So that was the dream. And I had not asked for a dream about this koan, but koans do their own thing. And so there it was. And the next thing that happened was my watch was gone. I'm sure it was on me when I went to bed. And it was gone. And it is gone. Gone, gone, gone. I looked, it's gone.
On the other side.
Exactly. So I says to myself, gate, gate, para gate, para samgate, bodhisvaha. And then I looked a little bit more. And it was still gone. So I went down to the creek. Some of you know that my field backs up on a branch of West Monument Creek, which is why we call my place Creek Bend Zendo. So I went down to the creek, and the beavers have been really, really, really working down there. There are two dams, and just, you know, trees everywhere, gullies everywhere, flattened grasses everywhere, cattails sort of leaning like this. I mean, it's chaos down there. It looks a lot like our world mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. The trees that were there, gone. You know, chips everywhere. Mm-hmm. I did finally go down and put fences around four or five trees that I wasn't willing to donate. But a lot of trees are down there, and so I carefully, you know, made my way down below the second dam where there's a breach in the dam, and the water rushing through under the ice and past. So, and I took pine cones because I wasn't willing to give up any balls. So, pine cones make pretty good balls for this purpose. And I noticed on the way down that I was wondering about the creek, because I don't go hang out down there as much as I will. But it was like, will my creek still remember me? Will I still remember my creek? Do we still belong to each other? So I just went and sat down right there, and I tossed a few pine cones, and they went very quickly. Surprise! And pretty soon that creek just did its creek magic, and there was just rushing water, yeah? And the traces of pine cones gone. Gati, para gati. And it was not only I'm made of this, and this is made of me. So I'll stop there.
All right. So my field notes from, it was just Friday that Sarah and I met and said, what are we going to do on Monday? And decided, well, when Sarah spoke this call, and I was like, oh yeah, let's hang out with this one. So we hung out with it for a few days and haven't talked about it at all until tonight. So we're kind of, well, sharing our field notes with each other. This is what happened for me. Which is kind of, I noticed in the announcement for tonight, it said the reason we're giving a talk together is because there's no meditation next Monday.
Yeah, I was curious about that too.
To me, I was like, that's the excuse. The reason is we get to. Yeah, we get to do this. As those, you know, when you meet with a teacher, anybody, you get to toss the ball around back and forth. So this is just sharing something we get to do together with all you, and we're all doing it together. So I just wanted to mention that it's a delight to be doing this for no reason, just because we get to. So when Sarah first mentioned it, I said to her, oh, I want to go down to, not too far from our house is another creek that flows into the same creek. But I said, I want to go down to the creek and toss a ball and just see, without thinking about it, you know, my ideas of what that ball might be, I just want to go and toss it in. And then I thought about it. It's like, well, I'm not going to toss a piece of plastic or rubber onto the creek and send it off into the world. And I thought, well, maybe I could set up something to catch it. It's like, no. So I scrapped that idea because it turns out I have long-standing experience with tossing things onto the water. Back when I was a child, and beyond being a child, I did this, and now I've passed it on to my son, and we do it together whenever we We go camping, especially near water, but sometimes we're just near a water. We like to play with it, which is to go get a bunch of sticks and toss them upstream, then run down and just watch and see what happens when they flow by. And it's really interesting because not the same thing happens. It depends on the size of the stick, the weight of the stick, how thick around it is, if it's skinny, long. And it's really, it's like, wow. Before that, my mind's just thinking they're all going to go whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. But instead, like the patterns on the water that I can't even see are revealed because we throw the sticks out there. And this one goes on down. This one curves around and gets eddied over here for a bit. And this one gets caught in that thing that keeps looping it, turning it over and over. It never goes anywhere for quite a while till another stick comes and hits it. Yeah, and then it moves on. So that's the first thing that, you know, that thing of tossing a ball onto rushing waters is a way we get to know the rushing waters, yeah? But at the same time, I can see that there are patterns that the water is doing that the stick isn't following. And they become more apparent because the stick isn't following them. And so I get this intimation, if that's the right word, that there's all these flows beneath, kind of like this, what is consciousness, that I do not know. And I know I do not know them because of the limited ones I do know. Yeah? And so, yeah, tossing the sticks, tossing the balls, it's just the surface, and I get to see that wondrous play, and it's varied and beautiful and surprising. And there's so much more yet to be known, or maybe never to be known, yeah. So that's the first playing that happened for me, so. Yeah.
Okay, great. Little tiny children, when they get next to a stream, all of us little tiny children throw sticks in the water. Anybody ever play poo sticks? You were playing a version of poo sticks. Anybody else know about poo sticks?
Somebody from Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah. Yeah, where what you throw two sticks up on the up high side of the bridge, and then you run down to the other side of the bridge and see whose stick won.
Yes.
and you get to, the fascination is you get to witness exactly what you were talking about. And it's pretty good when you're in the water doing it too. Yeah. And so one of the things that we do know about newborn infants, there are a couple things. We know now that babies in utero are starting to learn their native language. Do we want to call that consciousness? No, it doesn't matter. We know that they are starting to learn their native language. And we know, if we've ever met a newborn baby, what it's like to look in the eyes of that baby. And that's unclassifiable knowledge. But you know it. There's something you know about just being when you look at the first looks of a baby. And you recognize that because it's still you. Yeah. It's wondrous, and I was like, yeah, and that's me too. And in the question this student's asking, I think people didn't probably very often ask, well, I think they could probably ask pretty much whatever they wanted to, but I think they probably didn't want to waste their questions with Jiaozhou too much. So I'm willing to believe that the student is asking a question that matters to her. So if this is a question that matters to her, what is she really asking? So I notice that when I'm sitting in meditation, I can allow myself to just get really curious about the currents, about the ones I can see and the ones I can't see. Not think about them. Because once you're sitting by that stream, pretty soon it'll wash away whatever you're thinking about it, right? It'll do away with that fairly quickly and leave you speechless. But underneath, in that speechlessness, there's a kind of bond of curiosity. It almost reminds me of, you know, that there's a koan about a donkey seeing a well, and the well seeing the donkey. Yeah? So I feel a little bit about the donkey, like the donkey being seen by the well, mind being seen by the mind. That rushing water. Okay, your turn.
All right. Well, my next movement also went to the question in the way that Sarah's describing becoming that person just out of curiosity. What's the motivation for that question? Why am I, as that person, asking this? What's up with me? And so what I notice is in some translations it'll say the sixth consciousness. Does a newborn infant have the sixth consciousness, which is described as discriminating consciousness? So I'll come back to that. That was part of one of the things I looked up, had that word. The one we have doesn't. But I notice, for me, recalling that time, like you're speaking of, when you look into a child's eyes, that sense of wonder that I once had that I no longer have. And there's a part of me wanting to pinpoint, how did I lose it? When along the way did I lose that? So maybe I can go back and reclaim it or claim it.
Mm-hmm. That's like me wondering, are we still lovers? Mm. Me and the creek. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Did I lose it?
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because I want to pick on, well, it's this discriminating mind of mine. Maybe that's the problem, and that I am discriminating about my mind. Yeah. And so seeing this child, or remembering myself as a child, I'm wondering, is that the place where I lost it, when I started to discriminate and have this idea of separation? And can I get back to before that found its place? So that's the motivation for my question, is trying to get back to that place. Yeah. So then I'm wondering, is discrimination bad? Yeah? So on the right over here, I was thinking, as a newborn infant, completely, if there is a non-discrimination, I think one of the primary ways it comes forth is in the purpose that we put diapers on them. Anytime, any place, it's going to go. Yeah. No discrimination of the proper time or gotta go. So we put on the diaper. You know, keep the messes to a minimum. Yeah. Then as a parent, the experience of, you know, a couple years down the road, can't wait until we're done with the diapers and the training's happened so that our son has learned the time and the place for such business. It makes it a lot easier on me, right? So there's conditioning happening. And so I could see that as, did I squelch something here? Is that a useful discrimination? Or it really makes my life easier? But then I can see it from the infant's view as well, that no discrimination, doing my business. But I notice how good it feels when my diaper's changed and I'm cleaned up And I notice before then I was kind of, well, sticky, a little rashy, itchy, irritated. And that felt really nice to be cleaned up. So I learned over time, oh, I can influence that as well. So actually learning to discriminate is helpful for both parties, I think. So I don't think discriminating mind is actually a problem, because it is a functioning, useful ability that we develop. So I still need to wonder, so when does it become a problem? And that's maybe when we get rooted into habits of action and thought and things like that. So there's still a sliding scale, so there's still no answer. Yes, that's a problem, so we're still stuck with toss it out there. Yeah.
Great, lovely. So, I can riff from there too. Discriminating consciousness. So one of the earmarks of, another earmark, I like the one that you just used. Another earmark of discriminating consciousness is that we call this glass, right? And that we learn that out of the whole spectrum of colors, there's something called blue and there's something called red. And we learn those things really early. And they're very useful. And there's a feeling of power. You watch little guys, the feeling of power that comes in learning to make those discriminations. It's thrilling. You know, you can see how thrilling it is. And the there, it's seductive. So, partly because it's so useful, and partly because you get power. You learn the power. You learn to say no, pretty early on, and how to get places and how to get things, and those discriminating consciousness is very useful for those things. And yet, moment by moment, it never stops flowing.
Good timing, I guess.
Yeah, thank you. Fortunately, it did stop flowing.
Fortunately, there's a glass.
Yeah. And so I've been reading a little bit. Some of you know that I've been for 3 years studying some of the teachings of Trungpa Rinpoche in the collected seminar writings, and just have come to the end of the third one, which is about the sort of final stages, I guess you could say, of Vajrayana practice. And guess what? It's this. It's, yeah, so now that you have all these tools, can you put them down? What is it like when you let them go? Which is not to say they're bad tools, they're good tools. But when you allow yourself to relax completely, really completely, with moment by moment it never stops flowing, then you can recognize that all of our, what we work with our discriminating awareness is shot through with the absence of all the discriminations. And that when we can completely relax with that, there is bliss, which is not to say happy forevermore. It doesn't have much to do with happy or unhappy. I'll stop there. I got some, the only the other thing I got is some sort of quotes from the comments, which are kind of fun. Okay.
Yeah, I think my next and final movement goes well with that one, and then we'll flow into that.
Okay.
That sounds right. So what I noticed coming to mind is it's in various traditions, but I think like the Christian way of putting it is you must be like a child to enter through the gates of heaven. And what you shared, the Tao Te Ching yesterday, on the SMS page about that newborn. So in the Tao Te Ching, it talks about being like, you know, returning to that source, being like an infant. But really, the one that came to mind for me is a song, words from a song by Ziggy Marley, Son of Bob, which is just reframing the Bible into Rastafarianism. So Jah said, if you ain't like a child, you can't enter Mount Zion. So that's the one that's been going through with me. So I've just been looking at that idea of this aspiration to be like a child. But I notice if I'm trying to be like a child, I'm really trying to be like my idea of what I think a child is.
You're a grown-up trying to be like a child.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So then I'm looking at the infant and the child and realize it's not even being like a child because it has no idea what a child is and how a child is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So the infant, the child, is just being.
Yeah.
And to me, that's where things, that's the click. So the just being, wherever you are, and so this is where I think I flipped the tool thing a different way, is the child doesn't have all the tools, it's just being, and that's it. I do have a bunch of tools, and it's really that key of putting the tools down allows me to rest maybe more fully in the openness of that being, but then, so I guess not really flipping it, it's just a riffing on it. Then I can pick up the tools again with everything I have, my discriminations, my habits, but they're infused by that essential being. And that's where things are never stopping flowing, moment by moment. Even in the midst of all the stuff that I think are my troubles and the reasons why I'm... No. Everything I have, everything a child has, boom. It's like those sticks flowing. They have never stopped flowing. Their stickness, each of their individual sticknesses, become alive, and they are continuously flowing. So what came to mind as you were, before you handed it over to me, was the koans about, with hands of emptiness, I pick up the hoe.
Yeah.
And as I walk across the bridge flows. That's like in my wanderings and the picking up of my tools, it's all moment by moment. Never stopping flowing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Yeah, lovely. And that's exactly what I mean by, and I think that we find that we notice the presence of that more and more as a gift of our meditation.
Mm.
That when we sit and relax and let go of some of the trying, not trying to be like a child, not trying to be like anything, but just allow ourselves to notice and trust the noticing, then we can notice that we still are that. It's not that we didn't ever lose it.
Right.
Yeah. And then there were a couple of how are we for time? Because I lost my watch, remember?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Where has the time
he's
gone?
He's keeping time. So there were some really interesting little comments about, in the notes, in the commentary, comments of the commentary, included one that said, even when somebody has completely grokked this and, you know, is easy with it, they still must be rebuked. Did you notice that? It's an interesting little spot. So, to me, that is to say, it's kind of just what you were saying. You still got sticks going down the river. And it's not like, you know, I'm just going to go with the flow. It's not that move. It's that with everything, I am, the newborn infant and the adult full of, with a lot of tools, I meet what, I meet the next curve in the creek. Yeah. And I am the next curve in the creek. And there was another one that said, he's startled in the darkness. Isn't that lovely? He's startled in the darkness. It's not, again, it's not just like we're going to go with the flow and nothing's going to surprise us. Everything's going to surprise us. We ourselves are going to surprise us. And another phrase was, neither concentration nor not concentration. And I love that because it's it's an invitation not to get fixated on how to do this. Right?
Yeah.
It's just let it, you know, let it do it to you. And or not, just see what happens. Experiment, you know? But don't think it's concentration, don't think it's not concentration. And there's one little note from the Surangama Sutra that says, looked upon from afar, swiftly flowing water is tranquil and still. And then there's a little section from a poem by Rainer Maria Rilke that I thought I would bring in if I can find it. Where did it go? In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses. So I'm going to interrupt and I'll come back to it. One of the things that's, that infants don't do is to have lines between their senses, right? It's and we experience this in deep meditation and more going about the world, yeah? Where we can use those discriminations among senses we know that we see and that we hear, but we don't necessarily believe or have to rely on those discriminations for experiencing what is. So in this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses, the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water speak, I am.
Can you read that again, please? The whole thing.
It's a piece of a poem, but this is the best piece of it. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses, the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water speak, I am. I loved the way that kind of brought back that sense of the conversation of sticks and water. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, oh, that's the capping phrase for yeah. sure. I mean, it spoke to so much. That startled in the darkness, you know, that mystery, you know. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, that's yeah. that startled in the darkness of discovery of the meaning.
Yeah.
Just then, and then releasing it again.
Yeah.
So yeah. Beautiful.
Well, that means that there's still some time.
There's still some time.
To bring in what they'd like to bring in.